and welcome to SSI Live. You've long known the Strategic Studies Institute, or SSI, at the U.S. Army War College as the go-to location for issues related to national security and military strategy, with an emphasis on geostrategic analysis. SSI conducts strategic research and analysis to support the U.S. Army War College curricula, assist and inform Army, DoD, and U.S. government leadership, and serve as a bridge to the wider strategic community. Now we're bringing you access to SSI analyses, scholars, and guests through this, the SSI Live podcast series. Thanks for joining us.
Hello and welcome to this edition of SSI Live. My name is John Denny, and I'm a research professor of national security studies here at the Strategic Studies Institute at the U.S. Army War College. It's Monday, May 13th, 2024, and today I'm joined by my SSI colleague, Dr. Evan Ellis. Evan is a research professor of Latin American studies at SSI, and I've asked him to join us today for a discussion on his recent research trip to Paraguay. Evan, welcome.
Thanks, John. It's a pleasure to be part of you on the program.
Well, Evan, let's start broadly for our audience. Why don't you tell us a bit about Paraguay? I must say it's probably not on the radar of most the national security establishment or average Americans. But for those that don't know of it, tell us about the significance of it regionally. Where does it fit sort of in the bigger picture when you look at Latin America, both maybe physically and figuratively?
Paraguay is a landlocked country in the middle of South America, and in many ways, it is probably one of the most strategically important overlooked countries in the region. First of all, with respect to it's like Germany, of which Paraguay is approximately the same size, its importance to the continent has to do with its centrality in the continent and the way that centrality continually affects its neighbors with respect to both licit and illicit flows as well as politics. So in general, Paraguay is a significant agricultural producer, soy, beef, and other goods. But its centrality and landlocked nature means that that economic link for its agricultural goods, as well as its imports, go through the river corridor that goes down through Argentina and Brazil. And so decisions regarding the dredging and tolls along that river corridor, which is actually vital not only for Paraguay, but for five nations of the region, Paraguay, Bolivia, Argentina, Brazil, and Uruguay, create an importance to coordinate and negotiate those issues. In addition, Paraguay sits atop two significant sources of generation of hydroelectric power. The biggest, the Itaipu Dam, which it shares with Brazil, and the smaller Yacyretá Dam, which it shares with Argentina, which creates enormous capacity for low-cost energy production and actually makes Paraguay one of the most significant green energy producers in the region. But at the same time, of course, creating significant issues in terms of the negotiations of tolls and other things having to do with that energy. Paraguay is also a member of the common market of the South, Mercosur, and its role as a low-cost producer sets it up not unlike the situation with Mexico with the United States, where you have a small manufacturing sector, a maquiladora sector, if you will, for Paraguay's access to the markets of its neighbors, especially Brazil, but to a lesser extent, Argentina. That characteristic also gives it significant potential as a regional hub. There is improved transport corridor being constructed across Paraguay, but eventually linking it to ports in the north of Chile and eventually also to Brazil and the Atlantic. And so Paraguay's centrality gives it a lot of potential as a regional hub for the continent. And then, of course, you have the same things that make it important in commercial terms, also creating a lot of issues with respect to illicit flows. And so on the one hand, a lot of the cocaine that is produced in Peru and Bolivia to the northwest of Paraguay flows through Paraguay, relatively flat land, through Argentina and Uruguay on to Europe. And this has become a special problem as European cocaine demand and the prices received in Europe for cocaine have increased. But as well, in terms of marijuana, Paraguay's agricultural land make it basically the major producer of marijuana for the entire continent of South America and beyond. There are significant demands for arms, and Paraguay's ability to both import and export arms across its border have made it a major arms transit hub for a lot of the arms demanded by groups in Brazil and other places. And then, of course, because of that commercial centrality as well, Paraguay has become, especially the Ciudad del Este, a major contraband hub. And along with that contraband and other illicit flows, it has become one of the centers for operation of the terrorist group Hezbollah operating in the region. And then finally, Paraguay happens to also be the largest and only South American country still recognizing Taiwan over the PRC, which again makes that recognition have strategic importance, not only for the resistance to influence against PRC in South America, but to a certain degree, the continuing lifeline that Taiwan has with the rest of the world as it struggles against the PRC in the Indo-Pacific.
I mean, you paint a picture of a country that is literally at the crossroads of things in South America, as you mentioned, both for commercial licit activity, legal activity, but also illicit ones. Tell us a little bit now about its political context, and maybe here you can draw in why you went to the country at this time. I know last year there was a new president elected, Santiago Peña. Tell us about the context in which he was elected and what's been happening there in the months since he's taken office.
Paraguay has been dominated by the Colorado Party really for about 70 years now, going all the way back to the long dictatorship of Alfredo Stroessner. Within that, however, you have a split that's emerged in recent years within the Colorado Party between what is called the Honor Colorado faction of former President Horacio Cartes, who has been implicated by the United States for what we call a significant acts of corruption, and another faction by prior President Mario Abdo Benitez, known as Morito. In the election of April 2023, you had, on the one hand, a struggle between the Colorados and the possibility that the largest opposition party, the Liberal Party of Efraim Alegre, could win. Now, Alegre's two claims to fame, one is that he is and the Liberals are a little bit farther to the left, although not radically to the left. That would have implied a shift in Paraguay's orientation is a long, very conservative society. But at the same time, Alegre had talked about the prospect of recognizing the PRC, which again would have been strategically important. On the one hand, the victory of the Colorados continued that Colorado party dominance. But at the same time, Horacio Cartes, the previous president, also became the head of the party itself. And Cartes is also Peña's political sponsor and in many ways his mentor. And so you had this awkward situation in which really Peña is a very dynamic person, relatively untouched officially by corruption, a person who has a background as the finance minister or previous worked in the Inter-American Development Bank. Again, a very bright, astute person, but tied in some ways to his mentor. And of course, in my own trip, I was brought down to give a keynote speech at an event talking about the Taiwan relationship with the region. But in the process, I had the opportunity to meet personally with Peña and his national security cabinet. And frankly, I was extremely impressed by, again, in this often overlooked country, the credentials of Peña as a very bright, very, very outspoken, really very, very sincere person in his convictions towards the United States, but also Taiwan and loyalty towards Israel, and really seeking to continue to ally Paraguay as a country not only looking towards the United States, but a steward of free markets and leveraging some of the capabilities that Paraguay has, as a country to try to propel that economic development. So also important to note that with Peña's victory, and he took power in August of 2023. So he hasn't been in office that long, but he also has the advantage of the Colorado Party's continuing legislative dominance. If you look at the bicameral legislature, the Colorados have in the Senate, which has about 45 people, the Colorados have just above half half of that. In the lower chamber, that the House, which is an 80-member body, the Colorados have 48 members of that. So very much unlike many other countries in the region where you have minority parties struggling in power, you have in Paraguay now a basically relatively stable pro-US, pro-Taiwan country, which has legislative majority to do things and a very capable leader who is interested in doing things in a free market direction.
Evan, tell us now about some of the security challenges that Peña and his government are now facing. I mean, you I think hinted at some of what some of those likely are in your response to my first question. You know, things like the illicit drug trafficking or arms trafficking, that kind of a thing. But can you kind of summarize those for us and tell us what are the major security challenges they're facing today?
Absolutely, John. And this it really is the flip side of the vast promise of Paraguay, which is the enormous number of challenges and the depth of institutional corruption, largely because of some of these illicit flows over the years. Really, the principal one is narcotrafficking. As I mentioned before, Paraguay really sits in the middle of major cocaine flows, principally from Bolivia and Peru across its flatlands, the Chaco and the northwest of the country, which facilitates the movement of drugs by airstrips and land and in other fashion. And then, of course, towards Argentina and Brazil to the southeast, eventually going on towards Europe. And of course, Paraguay also has the difficulty of difficult to enforce land borders with Brazil, as well as when you look at the south of the country, difficult to enforce large numbers of ports along the river system that, again, leads to the southeast of the continent. And so along the way with those substantial drug flows, you've had not only major Brazilian groups like the First Capital Command, the PCC, and the Red Command, Comando Vermelho, and smaller groups like what's called the Bala na Cara, the bullet in the face Brazilian group, but also some homegrown groups such as what used to be a micro-trafficking group, the Rotella clan, which has grown up to be pretty significant. And frankly, because of the European drug flows, European mafia groups, especially Italian groups like 'Ndrangheta. And so, again, you have a vast array of illicit money and groups operating there and struggling for control. But on top of the cocaine flows, you also have marijuana flows. As I mentioned before, that fertile agricultural land means that something like 7,000 hectares of land are under cultivation, mostly in the east of the country for marijuana, making it the major marijuana producer for the region. Those Brazilian groups that are demanding arms, you have some 73 different Brazilian groups seeking to import arms. A lot of the arms flow through Paraguay, brought in through Ciudad del Este. That's become a major issue as well. You just had a major scandal last year where some 43,000 arms had been imported into the country illegally, about $243 million worth of arms, actually with unintended collaboration of the military organization that's supposed to supervise arms imports, Diamabel. On top of that, of course, you have a lot of those illicit group members in prison, and so you've had a problem with prison control over the past couple of years in prisons in places like San Pedro and Misiones. You've had violence between the different groups. This past year, you had a particularly bad situation with rioting in the Tacambú prison, which actually led to one of the most successful responses by the Paraguayan government to try to retake the prison control, retake the prison system. You've had difficulties also, as I mentioned before, with terrorism. And so on the one hand, you have, because of the illicit flows, the Lebanese-based group Hezbollah has operated in Ciudad del Este, Paraguay, a place known as the tri-border region. And then, of course, if that were not enough, you have a small homegrown terrorist group in the east of the country, the Popular Paraguayan Army, the EPP, which, although most of its members have been arrested, they occasionally have conducted high-profile kidnappings and other actions, burning farm equipment, some attacks occasionally against military outposts, although they're down to perhaps only 20 to 30 full-time members, but still continues to be a concern because of their operation in the country.
Well, Evan, I'm interested now in finding out from you, how is the Peña government managing these kinds of challenges? What did you learn from him and his national security team when you met with them? But I want you to, if you can, in your answer, unpack the comment you just made about how a government agency in Paraguay responsible for overseeing or enforcing arms trade in some way was involved in an illicit trafficking incident. Did I get that right? And can you explain that for us?
You did, John. And the broader context really is that, with Paraguay being for many years a relatively closed conservative society with one-party control, with a lot of illicit flows, really the key difficulty overall in Paraguay has been endemic corruption of its institutions across the board. So I'll have to say, again, I was extremely impressed by what appears to be the willingness and initial efforts by President Peña to try to fight against these things. Although, again, it's an enormous challenge and one is just beginning to scratch the surface. But going down a little bit of the list of difficulties that we just talked about, really across the board, there are some efforts. So he has a national defense organization, somewhat equivalent to the U.S. National Security Council. Its head is a retired Admiral Cibar Benitez. And I was extremely impressed at the way in which President Peña and Admiral Benitez have made efforts to use the National Security Council to have a more coordinated interagency response to some of these challenges. In addition to that, they have a counter-drug organization, SANAD, which, although it has its problems, you're beginning to see the integration of SANAD with the police and the military in various operations I'll talk about in a minute. You have a very important counter-money laundering and financial control organization called SEPRELAD. This is like the financial intelligence units that you see across the region. And despite all of Paraguay's problems, SEPRELAD is actually surprisingly competent. The head of SEPRELAD, Liliana Alcaraz, was recently, they passed a very important review by the Financial Action Task Force, the oversight organization for these type of organizations in the region, and indeed recognizing the work that SEPRELAD has done. Liliana Alcaraz was actually elected president pro tem of the Financial Action Task Force organization for Latin America. So that's a bit of a good news story. In terms of some of the narcotrafficking flows beyond just SANAD, their equivalent of the DEA, you have basically a combined task force, which brings military and police elements, especially operating in the east. They had, for example, recently a relatively successful operation called Ignis against one of the local traffickers in a part of Paraguay called Canandeyu. But again, a small step, but the level of interagency coordination it demonstrated was hopeful. They also have a intelligence organization, kind of their equivalent of the CIA called the National Intelligence Directorate at the SNI, which, again, although they basically had to replace a significant number of the political appointees from the previous outgoing administration, they are making efforts to try to build up the SNI under President Peña. In addition to that, there's some indication that they're doing a better job in getting intelligence sharing with their Brazilian counterparts, again, with the flows to and from Brazil being a very important part of the difficulties. So not only in the counter-narcotic organization activities that I just mentioned, but also in trying to retake control of some of the prisons, that is a hopeful sign. Another dimension of the challenge that I alluded to before was trying to retake the prisons, given how those gangs, PCC and Comando Vermelho and the Rotella clan had taken prisons. And so after that bloody riot in the Tacambú prison last year, the Paraguayan authorities moved to basically reassign about 700 members of the Rotella clan, including the Rotella clan head, Javier Rotella. And the people that I talked to said that it was a really remarkably well-planned operation. They operated about 3 months in secrecy, apparently without anybody figuring out that they were going to do this. They had electronic and other forms of deception. They had interagency operation. And so, again, it was really a hopeful hopeful sign that they pulled this off at the scale that they did. And then after that, they actually had a series of smaller operations, something called Operation Purgatorio, or the Brazilians call it Joapai, which essentially was trying to identify and get some of their clandestine members of the Brazilian gangs, the PCC and Comando Vermelho, out of those prisons, again, which was relatively successful. And then there have been some a series of other operations, one against marijuana called Nueva Alianza. They had about 39 separate operations. So it was a pretty big operation, although, again, they regularly do these marijuana cutting down operations. And so that's something that, still needs a lot of work. They have a demand reduction and local consumption reduction program called SUMAR, which, again, is a hopeful sign, although a lot of work yet to be done. And of course, you asked me to elaborate a little bit on the situation with arms. Again, huge arms demand from Brazil, a lot of it coming through Ciudad del Este. But again, the military organization that is supposed to basically regulate the import of arms into the country, it's called DIAMBEL. Unfortunately, it turned out that organization had been thoroughly corrupted, and indeed the head of the Paraguayan Air Force, Arturo Gonzalez, who, shockingly for me, when this operation occurred, I actually had known him and worked with him in a different capacity through our Air Force to Air Force cooperation. Again, as it turned out, they discovered in this massive operation de Covo that DIAMBEL had been implicated, others had been implicated. But with the help of the Brazilians, they at least did a pretty major effort to clamp down on at least some of the arms trafficking. And then in addition to that, you have some other more capabilities acquisition oriented things that they're doing. As we mentioned before, they'd had some problems with the PCC, including ambushing some of their patrols. They bought a series of basically heavy MRAP type of vehicles from the United Arab Emirates for deployment in that region. They're trying to get a hold of a series of radars. They need a total of 9, but in the near term, they're trying to get 4 to 5 radars in conjunction with new interceptors to cover those aircraft that are basically flying into the country from Bolivia in Peru and landing in unimproved airstrips in the Chaco. So that's about $120 million program that's in progress, but they're scrambling to get the money for that. You also have the acquisition of new interceptor aircraft, probably going with the Brazilian Tucanos, looking at buying 6 new ones and maybe refurbishing another 6. Again, a question of where the money comes from that. It's about $120 million program in its own right. And then in addition, because you do have an issue with river control to the limited number of rivers that Paraguay has, the U.S. is actually working with the country to help supply some boats for that, both large and small patrol boats. And then on top of that, you have certain things that the Paraguayans are doing to build up their police capabilities. One of the innovative things that they've done to have rapid access in urban areas for police and more police mobility is they have a motorcycle-mounted police group called Lince. They've recently expanded Lince by about 1,200 members. The Taiwanese have actually donated 600 motorcycles for this pretty major effort. And then, of course, the police itself, the Peña administration is working to expand the police. They have an incredibly ambitious target to try to expand them by something like 5,000 police members a year. They're currently at about 24,000 police, which is a pretty tiny number of police for the size of the country. They're hoping to get it eventually up to 60,000 police, although given the limitations of the police academy and the limitations of the budget, we'll see whether that actually happens. But again, what I'm trying to describe here is just an across-the-board significant effort, both in terms of material acquisition, personnel expansion, and operations where it is impressive the degree to which the Peña administration is trying to at least make a dent in this massive, challenge of corruption and organized criminal activity that's going on across the country.
Your last couple of comments there were a good segue into what the American role is all of this. You mentioned the U.S. donating some patrol craft, but I have to go back to something you said at the outset of your last answer, and that was the fact that a landlocked country has an admiral at the head of essentially its equivalent of the NSC, right? Can you shed any light for us on the sort of personnel issues that would lead the government in that? It just strikes me as unusual, that that would be the case.
Absolutely. I've known and worked with Admiral Benitez. He's really a very impressive person. So within Paraguay, although it is landlocked country, but to a certain degree, its waterways are strategic both for commerce and in other issues. And so control of those waterways and the associated river ports are absolutely vital for the nation. And so, again, while the Paraguayan maritime service is relatively small. You do have a limited number of general officers. I think Admiral Benitez was selected to be the head of the Defense Council, not so much because of the size of the Paraguayan Navy, but because of his kind of capabilities in institutional relationships. With respect to the broader question also that you posed, the U.S., although the U.S. Activities to support Paraguay have been relatively modest, we probably channeled a lot more resources to other places, something which I think deserves to get at least somewhat of a relook. We, for example, have been working with the Paraguayan maritime authorities. We're providing about 10 new watercraft, including two larger patrol vessels and a number of smaller ones. We actually had worked with the Paraguayans with respect to trying to better control their airspace to make sure that the coordination between the radar interceptors and shoot down laws is consistent with our ability to be able to interact with them and some of the traditional concerns that the U.S. has had about assuring life and due process in aerial intercepts. And that was actually a success story that the U.S. was able to work with Paraguay to do that. One of the big things that's not received a lot of attention, the U.S. has actually significantly expanded its professional military education and training programs. So Spaces for Paraguay, for example, within the Western Hemisphere National Security Institute, WINSEC, once known as the School of the Americas, as well as billets and various other schools. Again, we're talking about a doubling in the past couple of years of U.S. PME slots for Paraguay. And then, of course, beyond just military, you have a lot of U.S. help for the anti-corruption fight, trying to build up Paraguayan institutions, as well as working to help Paraguay create economic opportunity and make it better as a recipient of investment. A lot of good USAID programs there. And then, frankly, on the other side, I know that one significant U.S. concern has consistently been corruption. And I know the U.S. Embassy team and Ambassador Ausfeld are very outspoken with respect to their concerns against former President and Colorado Party boss, head Horacio Cartes, and his implication for what the U.S. has named as significant corruption. So I think trying to, on the one hand, extend a helping hand to the Peña administration and build as positive of ties as possible, while at the same time also trying to keep up a certain amount of pressure in those persons or institutions that the U.S. has concerns over their corruption.
Evan, let me ask you to put on your policymaker advisor hat now. What do you think? You've outlined for us what the U.S. has been doing most recently. Do you think there needs to be more effort placed on what has been happening to date? What would you advise policymakers to add to the mix of things we are trying to help Paraguay with? What's your sense of how the U.S. can best enable Peña to overcome some of these challenges you mentioned?
Absolutely, John. Well, first of all, I think we have a pretty solid team in Asunción itself. It has to do with, for me, an issue of the resources that we give and the attention that we give to Paraguay. As I indicated in the outset, for me, Paraguay is really underappreciated in its strategic significance. Again, if Paraguay flips from Taiwan to the PRC, the jump in potential influence in the region and the possible implications for the Indo-Pacific of losing its geographically largest partner for Taiwan would be enormous. In addition, of course, as I mentioned before, Paraguay is that central glue for so many of the illicit flows through the region, drugs and arms, and so the importance of impacting them that way. But frankly, the possibility of Paraguay is a good news story. Again, this is a country with a stable currency. This is a country that is at the heart of Mercosur. This is a country that is a strong U.S. friend at a time when, frankly, the U.S. does not have that many strong U.S. friends that want to work with it, especially in issues like Israel and other things. Just the criticality of helping Paraguay to succeed for me is vital. And so when I look at kind of where we're at, I'm not sure if I would counsel any fundamental changes in direction, but certainly I think there's space for expanded security cooperation, working with Paraguay's joint task force, working with anti-corruption initiatives, and always the necessity of having greater resources for those things, and really kind of the nuts and bolts like, you know, funding for, you know, polygraphs and lifestyle, investigations, things like, again, continuing support for their financial intelligence unit, the SEPRELAD, even to a greater scale, given the pressure of illicit money. I think there's a lot of space for greater work with the Taiwanese. Again, I was impressed. Taiwan has sent one of their best ambassadors, Ambassador Han, as well as a really solid team. They've done a lot of important things to help Paraguay, including helicopters and Humvees and the donation of motorcycles for the Lince forces. I think the U.S. can do a lot more to really work more closely in security and other domains with the Taiwanese to help the Peña administration succeed. And then, frankly, I think there's more broadly than security, the U.S. can play an important role in helping Paraguay to strengthen its international image and really help the international community recognize the potential of Paraguay as a potential source of investment. I'm talking things like, expanded support from the U.S. Development Finance Corporation, recognizing the possibility not only for agricultural production and other things, termination of the strategic corridor going to the Chaco, Paraguay's potential as a green energy hub, whether it's issues such as green hydrogen aligned with what the Biden administration is looking to, or frankly, its role as a low-cost producer going into the Mercosur market, which is, again, a kind of a win-win strategy. And frankly, using all of that green energy to build up its IT sector. Paraguay, ironically, has a very good source of some of the purest silica for the making of silicon chips. And so there's the possibility really more broadly of a whole green energy funded IT sector, I think, in Paraguay that is substantially underrealized if you address some of the issues that you have with juridical security and other things. And so I think even beyond just security cooperation, there's a lot more that the U.S. can do to really showcase and help to bring international investment resources to Paraguay and to really show the potential of a free market country, a stable conservative country, a friend of the U.S., and how far you can take that as a success story. I think that's kind of the direction to go.
Well, Evan, you've given us a lot to think about here. You've really shed some light on a country that, frankly, doesn't get a lot of attention. And I think it's vitally important, as you outlined, for a variety of reasons that Paraguay probably should get more attention. So I really appreciate you helping us think through in this what's been a kind of a deep dive on Paraguay and its geographic, political, and security context, and for why it should matter more to American policymakers. So Evan Ellis, Research Professor of Latin American Studies, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, John. A pleasure to be part of the program.
You can now find SSI Live on TuneIn Radio and on popular podcast directories like Stitcher and at the iTunes Store. If you have any comments on our podcasts, thoughts on what you'd like to see addressed, or a response to something you heard here at SSI Live, please go to our website. That's ssi.armywarcollege.edu. Find me, John Denny, in the staff directory, and send me an email. I look forward to hearing from you. For the SSI Live podcast series, I'm John Denny. Thanks for listening.